Hey there, it's Ben. I'm just wanting to give a quick shout out to those of you who are interacting with us on Twitter, Facebook, and the Discord. And I'm going to give a quick shout out to our Patreon backers, some of which are going to be having a backer game on this upcoming weekend. You can be like them at patreon.com/theHeinian Way. Thank you, and now on to the show. Hey, Risa, how often do you come back to Chalmers? I'm finding I get back here less and less, but still good to get here. There's no atmosphere like it. I think the pot we're looking for should be showing up pretty soon, too.
I don't get back as much as I used to. I tend to patronize more swanky spots nowadays. Wealthier clientele to swindle, of course. But I do still like to come back every once in a while. It is a great place to pick up pilots. Welcome to A Messy Tale from the Heidian Way. We're your hosts, Risa D.
And Ben Yendel. Anytime I'm doing this stuff, I just kind of get giggly. This week we're talking tropes. And sometimes it isn't a five-letter word, it's a four-letter word. Because there are people out there who don't quite grasp the concept of tropes and why they have become tropes and why they are signposts instead of things to avoid. An example of being immensely anti-trope is the Song of Fire and Ice series, where it's taking almost anything that is trope-tastic in fantasy and then not doing that. That's almost the stated goal of the fantasy series, is, all right, this is where you think it's going to go? Nope. Then what it does with that, some people are on board for, some people are not. But tropes are not necessarily bad. They are signposts. They are shorthand. If you're trying to do something quick, you lean into the tropes. If you're wanting to do something noir, you have a back alley. It's either raining or it has just rained. You have smoke coming off, drifting across. You've got dumpsters. You've got cats jumping on trash can lids. It's night with very stark lighting. Oh, look, this is a information drop scene in a noir film. And in doing so, you've got a lot of the extra nuance to it filled in. It's one of the reasons why when I'm getting together a playgroup, I try and find out what people have watched so that I then have an idea of what tropes they are exposed to.
Yeah.
Can use them as shorthand. And sometimes they are great thought experiments on what to do, because you then get the genre savvy, which is a trope unto its own. And, okay, I know this is this trope. To use a D&D one, because it is the best way that I can think of. Okay, we're going up against these trolls. They are weak against fire, otherwise they will regenerate all of the damage that we do to them. And so they get out their torches and start trying to burn this troll because, well, that's just awful. You get the troll reaching down and just sort of grabbing the flaming tip of the torch and putting it out. It's like, yeah, that doesn't work. I'm now jumping to like half of the vampire styles that I've seen where it's, yeah, no, that doesn't work on vampires. That's just tales that people tell to make them feel better, that we can be defeated.
I like what you said about tropes being shorthand. They're like a sketch. Like, if I do say something that is a trope, right, I don't have to completely describe the scene. I can rely on stating something that everyone has a reference to in their brain. Because that's what a trope is,
mm-hmm.
Right? At the base of it, that's what it is. It is a reference point that enough people have that it's become a trope. It has been done enough times in stories, in movies, in books, anything. It has been done enough times that most people will have a reference point to it. That's why it's a trope. I mean, some tropes have negative connotations.
Absolutely.
And those are tropes we do want to avoid. Like, you know, tropes like fridging, which is when a woman dies in someone's backstory to further a man's story, right? That's a trope we would want to avoid.
Yeah.
Whereas a trope like the hero starts their journey after meeting people in a tavern, that's not a trope we have to avoid, right? That's something that we can just use because it's a good way to start a story. That's why it's a trope.
Even if you are wanting to spice it up, it's one of those things of, okay, so yes, we're all starting in a tavern. In last episode, Risa, you talked of having people meet in a hotel.
Yeah.
One of the places in actual hotels is they usually have a restaurant or a bar inside, or a restaurant with a lounge. Okay, so yeah, everyone's just meeting in a lounge at the hotel.
Or the continental breakfast.
That actually works so much better.
Everyone's down there, stuffing their face, trying to all wait in line for the waffle maker. Because there's always only one. The other one's always broken.
That's when something happened.
Yeah.
But it's still people meeting together in a common location. Like, it is the trope.
Exactly.
You're also kind of
spicing it up.
And, of course, you're going to run into the generous savvy player that who decides to lampshade. It's like, wow, geez, this is convenient. We're all here at the same time. Or something along those lines. It's like, yes, that is.
That is convenient, isn't it? What's good about tropes is that they can make a story, even if you're using a bunch of tropes, right? There are so many of them that you can shuffle them, right? You don't have to just use the same five every time, because that's what makes something predictable, right? You can spice them up, use different things, use them in a different order. If you use, like, a bunch of tropes, right? There are so many of them, right? It's like the English language. We used to do this in linguistics class. There are so many words in the English language, even if you think you know all of them. If you just make a 6-word sentence and you type it into Google in quotation marks, something like, I ate yogurt for breakfast today. You type that into Google. Those are all very common words, but you put that in with quotation marks, you'll find like maybe 2 or 3 hits of that exact sentence in that exact order. The same thing happens with tropes. They're all very common tropes. That's what they have to be a trope. However, it's the order in which you use them, the ones you choose to put there. No one else is going to come up with the same exact thing you did. That's the glory of tropes. It doesn't have to be like, well, that trope isn't interesting. We've seen it all before. Yes. But have you ever seen that trope next to this trope? Now it's new. Now it's different.
We're doing this in a role-playing game.
Yeah.
It's one thing to have these tropes happen in stories that you're not participating in, but then it happens to your character.
Oh, yeah.
One of the amazingly classic tropes that you kind of got to ask yourself if you're writing, just as writing, do I really want to do this or what is my spin on this? And generally for a trope, you should be asking that. Anyway, depowering a overpowered character, like depowering Superman or taking away the Green Lantern's ring. Mm-hmm. The reason for doing that is to show off that, yes, these people are still heroes even without their powers, and they still strive to do what is good. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't make the stories that get told executing these tropes any less good. Yeah. As long as it isn't cookie cutter going along the hero's journey, you've got the, 13 stops on the way?
Yeah.
Not everything's going to be Aragon. Or you can create good stories. You can still touch upon many of these basic ideas and basic themes and still have a good story with it.
I mean, what can happen if you completely try to avoid tropes is it can confuse your players. There's something to be said about tropes is that it helps along the way. It helps keep them with your story. It helps guide them from one thing to the next because it's familiar. They know that what happens after Superman is in contact with the kryptonite is he gets his powers taken away, right? So if you do something like that, but then you try to avoid that trope at the same time, it's going and suddenly Superman's powers are like threefold and then it kills him. I don't know.
There's probably a kryptonite that does it.
Probably. But it's going to take away that familiarity, and it makes it harder to follow a storyline like that, for one thing. It makes it harder to connect to a storyline like that if you're trying to constantly be subverting tropes at all turns, right? It can also make it so that, especially if you're doing any kind of investigation or if you guys are having them, you know, try and go after some big bad, and they're trying to track someone or something, and you constantly are taking away these tropes from them that they know, it can get frustrating.
An antagonist only works if the players think they have a chance against the antagonist.
Exactly. Otherwise, they'll just run away. Or they should. To be fair, players can be very like, I don't care if I have a chance. I'm going to try and kill him anyway. Or at least maybe that's just mine.
No, I know several who are like that too.
They can just start feeling discouraged. I know I do. If I feel like something isn't making sense, because that also can happen. If you're trying to just subvert every single trope and not follow any of them, your story can stop making sense because there's a reason that these are tropes. A lot of the times it's because they're things that make sense and that's why they get used a lot. Sometimes something just makes sense in a story, so that's why it got used a lot and that's how it became a trope. So if you're trying to subvert tropes like that and you're making things happen, like if you're doing a surreal campaign, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Definitely try to subvert all the tropes there. That actually sounds really fun. Now I want to do a surreal, where everyone's in dreams. That sounds like so much fun. Everyone gets like sucked into dreams and it's like half Alice in Wonderland, half Hitchhiker's Guide.
That does sound like it could be fun.
That sounds fantastic. Yeah, that's the kind of place where you want to subvert all the tropes because it's supposed to not make any sense.
Okay, one of the things you just said really sort of speaks to me when dealing with tropes. Whatever happens in the story has to happen because of the characters.
Yeah.
You were saying how things have to make sense, and it has to make sense for the characters in there. If you have a big brute of a person that the players are tracking down, having them be this amazingly careful person that leaves almost no trail and is a computer whiz, I'm not saying that that can't happen, but it starts pushing on the edge of credulity, because what weaknesses does this bad guy have?
Yeah, they're super strong, super smart, super...
If you're going up against a hyper-competent being, what chance do I got? That's kind of the thing. It's like, okay, the planner is always thinking about their ego and never thinking that someone would not think with their ego, thus providing a very good way to get rid of a mastermind-type antagonist. But it's always like the selfless act that then, hey, look, the selfless act is a trope.
Yep.
Almost anything that the mastermind's going to do. Anywhere from a Xenistos speed chest all the way to whatever the heck it was Goldfinger was trying to do. I kind of lost track.
I have no idea. That movie makes no sense to me.
There was plans. It was something about the gold supply in Fort Knox. Then there was a flying top hat, and that's about where I remember.
Yeah.
Bond villains on their own are a trope. Like, each one of them has their own master plan. Oh, geez, the one that I remember the most, which is just, oh, why, is a guy constructs a stealth cruiser, which is, like, the silliest thing that I've ever seen. Yeah, it works with ATSI radar, whatever. So, launches a missile at China and sinks a British ship in Chinese waters, trying to raise up tensions to start a war so that they could report on it and corner the information market. Tomorrow never dies. That's pretty much the plot. Because tomorrow is the paper. They've got a nonsensical master plan. Yep. Yes, internally to that character, it totally makes sense, and they're wanting to do it because they're the person who is bringing this vision into the world.
Yep.
That's a Bond villain. Because of that, a Bond villain's a trope.
No, Mr. Bond, I want you to die, you know? And I never get tired of that. I'm never going to get tired of that specific kind of thing. Because I'm used to it. It's good. It's familiar. It's what I want out of a Bond movie.
Exactly. Like, and even if you are attempting to subvert the Bond tropes, you still hit the initial points of the tropes. You still have to do some of the tropes to get the rest of the trope to have teeth. Like, the closest thing to a Bond movie that isn't actually a Bond movie that still is a Bond movie is the Daniel Craig Casino Royale.
Yeah.
Where it's Bond, it's still like Bond starting out, all that sort of stuff. So much better than the Woody Allen movie. It's one of those things of, No, that's still a Bond movie. Still has all the trappings of a Bond movie. It's just without, like, a lot of the gadgets that became the Roger Moore style Bond.
Yeah.
But it's still hitting all the different tropes of it. You still have a big bad that has a plan. You still have the femme fatale. You've got all that stuff still in it.
And if you started stripping those things away from it, it starts becoming less and less of a Bond film.
Okay. One of the things I want to ask you is, for a heist movie,
mm-hmm.
like, this is a subset within a heist movie genre. This is more, it's not that much of a subset. Like, it's still big within the heist movie set. There is usually the final twist of a heist movie. The mm-hmm. expected betrayal.
Yeah.
Would you expect a heist type movie to happen without something along that lines showing up?
No. Even Solo had it. Solo was basically a heist movie.
Oh yeah, it totally was.
I mean, sorry, that's just the most recent thing I saw that was a heist movie. Because it was.
Oh, it totally was.
I didn't get to see Ocean's 8. I don't watch movies in theaters. Except for Star Wars and probably the Lego movie.
Ocean's 8 is just coming around to streaming soon.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I'll watch it when it's on streaming stuff. Because I love half of the cast.
It's definitely better than 12. I don't really remember 13 well enough to say whether it's better. Is it at least as good as 11?
It is one of those tropes, I feel, for at least ensemble heist movies.
Yes, absolutely. That's a very good point to it.
Otherwise, yeah, you kind of have to have it because it's that like final bit of otherwise your main conflict, right, is it's you guys stealing the thing. So that's not like a very super big conflict. I mean, it's a very big conflict. Either you're going to get it or not.
Mm-hmm.
But you always have to have a big interpersonal conflict as well.
And that's the thing.
That's where the betrayal comes in. Usually. Someone was actually working for the feds. Someone is trying to take it for themselves. There are several tropes it could be, but there are several things. I'm going to take this and actually retire to my own.
Yep.
Or it's a double betrayal. I was going to be taking it. I was actually working for the feds, but oh no, you knew I was, so you actually gave me the fake stuff. I was never being trusted. You knew all along I was working.
Yeah, then you start getting into the deep head fakes of... because you've either got the willing accomplices in, like, mm-hmm. say, Solo or the Ocean's movies, or you've got the one I just keep going back to is, like, The Heist. I'm pretty sure that's what it's called with Gene Hackman.
Don't know that one.
Oh, and it's got Danny DeVito in it. But the... and Sam Rockwell, of all people. Now that I'm remembering the cast... It's the sort of classic, and we can just start going by all the tropes that I list off. It's the final job, and then they're out.
Mm-hmm.
It's the, you've got one person from the crime boss. In this case, I think it's his nephew that is in there. And it's this person slowly starts taking over the heist because they are speaking on behalf of the crime boss. You've got them building up to... have this intricate plan where timing is everything and the people start messing with their timing. They start acting recklessly so that like someone's drunk or appearing to be that way. They go through the plan and it just barely works, or you're wondering whether the timing's actually going to work out and then something goes right just barely. And then you've got the final sort of blow-off where all of a sudden, where, yes, in this case, I think they're stealing gold. They meet up and they hand over the gold. You have the sudden but inevitable betrayal by the Sam Rockwell's character. They pull a gun. Everyone else has to walk away. Someone gets shot. I think in this case it was Gene Hackman's character. Later on, like, and an ambulance gets called and all the fun stuff. The sort of final bit is someone walking up onto a boat. There you have Gene Hackman's character polishing these. The thought is they're gilded railings on the boat and like goes all the way around the boat. But no, they're solid gold. Like almost every single thing that I describe is a trope.
Yeah.
In heist movies. Now that I have described it, if anyone were to watch The Heist, it would be everything is just sort of called out.
Yeah.
it's also well acted and the characters are kind of interesting. So it's still worth watching. It's like, all of that is a trope. Why does it work? Because the character beats work for it.
Yeah.
The thing that I've started to find is that every time that you think that you're trying to subvert a trope, you're finding the other trope that is sort of its mirror to go to.
A lot of the time. Most tropes have been subverted enough. The subversion of the trope is now a new trope. At this point, a lot of them do have a mirror version of themselves as a trope. If you, at home, would really like to know about a lot of tropes, there is TV Tropes. As, you know, if you really want to waste 8 hours, you can go on there.
Yeah, you can follow like half of the links that are going to be in the show notes.
TV Tropes is, it's a, you know, a time sink sometimes, if you really want to. It's like wiki walking, but worse. It's interesting, especially in the way that you start noticing things that you didn't realize was there before.
Exactly.
Which, again, it's not bad. And if you start knowing what tropes are, I found it actually can help with my RPG stuff. It helps a lot. I know writing things as an actual, like, if you're writing a book or something, it might not be as helpful. I understand that because you actually have to write out dialogue and have to write out what's happening. You can't just say, use this trope here, like I do in my notes. Because, like what you said at the beginning, when you were describing that noir alleyway, right? In my notes, I can just say, noir detective's office.
Yep.
And then I can look at that, and I know that trope.
Pretty much.
That's just my shorthand now. Now, when I'm describing that to my group, I can say, and then she opened the door, and you hear the blinds go back and forth, and she shuts the door, shuts hard behind her. She looks at me and I see her through the shades from my blinds are hitting her, you know, that kind of thing, right?
Yep.
So all I saw in my notes was noir detective's office. And from that, I can just say all of this. And as I start describing that, I don't have to go super in depth on what it is. Enough people will know about the blinds and they'll know about how that light is coming in and it'll start filling out the rest of the office for them. If I describe that one thing, because that is the trope. The slanted light through the blinds, and it's cutting across with just her eyes are highlighted, right? And she asks me for help, right?
Exactly, yep.
There it is. They're right there. They've seen it enough times that they know exactly what I'm talking about. I don't have to describe everything that's in the office. I don't have to describe exactly what she's wearing. They have a picture in their mind now.
Yeah, pretty much.
And that's what the trope is there for. And it's super, super useful when you're writing your RPG notes, getting ready for your session. Like, it is so useful because then you don't have to write huge blocks of text.
Exactly. And then you can improvise based on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, for your private investigator's office, you've got the kind that you're talking about. I'm just sort of thinking of a different kind where sun's streaming in the side.
Mm-hmm.
The windows themselves have not been cleaned in probably years.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like caked with dirt. You can see it around the outside. You've got paper strewn across the desk. You've got an empty Mickey in the inbox and the detectives in a crumpled shirt, ties loose around their neck, sleeping on this wooden chair that tilts back enough so that they can actually sleep, their hats down over their eyes, and as the door slams, they're startled awake. like you can see,
yep,
pretty much the whole thing.
And there are empty takeout containers on the desk.
Exactly. By having that sort of trope, that little one-line thing, you can start riffing on it. As soon as the other people in the scene are aware of this, they can start riffing on it as well.
Because, like, you can say all of that stuff, and now I can say, as I'm walking in the office, right? I'm the person who just walked to the office. You just described all that to me, and I can say, I close the door, and I am trying to walk my way through stacks of old newspapers that are in this office, right?
Right.
Because there's this whole trope. Now that I'm seeing of this guy in this kind of like dirty office, and now he's got all obviously all this stuff here. So now I'm just trying to make my way to his desk.
Yeah.
People can start playing with the environment if you just give them that thing that they know enough about that they can start working with. And you don't have to describe literally everything. Because if you sit there and you describe literally everything about that room, one, you're just going to lose their attention.
Yep.
Two, you'll say something that is not important, and then they will think is important. Those are the two things.
Especially if you do something that they think is out of place, that doesn't fit the trope.
Yeah.
It's at that point where, if we were talking about a video game, that's where it would just be blinking.
Yeah.
You've got the spotlight on it. It's like, this doesn't belong here. That's our clue.
If then, you know, you described that entire office, and then I was like, and then there's a cell phone on the desk. You would be like, what? I would like to see that cell phone.
Pretty much.
Everything else in here is from the 30s. Can I see that cell phone now? That draws your attention directly to that, because that does not fit in with the trope of the rest of the office.
Tropes with just sort of description are one thing. Tropes with NPCs can be great, and they can also be amazingly hazardous.
Yeah, it depends on if you're going with a trope of a character like arc, or if you're just stereotyping something.
Yeah. Because
that's what you want to avoid. You want to avoid stereotyping.
Yeah, let's use Star Wars because it's nice, easy, and fairly... So...
I wonder if we're thinking about the same character. No? Okay, go with it.
Gunray? What are we talking about?
No. Okay, never mind. Go on.
I will absolutely use a different one from... No, I'm thinking of Bib Fortuna, Tara Syndulla, Cham Syndulla. You may have a stereotype, which is... Oh, look, all Rodians are bounty hunters because Greedo was.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, hey, look, now on the Resistance, you've got Hype Faison, which is a cocky hotshot pilot, which is nothing like Greedo.
Yeah.
Other than maybe the cocky thing. So it turns into, with tropes regarding characters, you want to be kind of careful that you're not, you don't want to just go for the lazy trope. You actually want to have it be like somewhat sensical. If they're doing something in there, you want there to be a reason for it. Like if they're amazingly cheap, you might want to have it so that business doesn't look like it's doing that well. Like that there's a lot of stuff built up on the counters and whatnot, that there aren't any other customers in there.
Lots of dust on the merchandise.
Yeah. It's because of that and because of these secondary sort of tropes of, well, this business isn't doing that well, which if you were to walk into any business, you'd think the same thing. That's the reason why they're going to be seemingly cheaper, as opposed to someone who's like, place is absolutely clean. They've got like a little mouse droid just going around buffing the entire floor. Like you're able to slide across because it's so polished.
Mouse droids are a Star Wars trope. And they're a fantastic one at that.
Yep.
Love those little guys. Funky little robots. Love them. But I was thinking of Twi'leks, thinking of, for my example, how female Twi'leks are often in universe scantily clad and like dancers and stuff, and how that's maybe not like a great stereotype or trope to fall onto.
Nope.
Like maybe think about doing more like Hera or, you know, anything other than that.
I'm thinking from the Edge beginner game.
Oh, I don't remember. But, you know, think of something other than that for her to do, maybe. Stuff like that. Like, that's like a negative stereotype, I feel.
That would be an understatement, yeah.
So you can avoid. Same with other stereotypes.
Oscara, that's it.
I lost my train of thought. That's fine.
Sorry.
No worries. It happens quite a bit.
Well, okay, to continue on with what you're saying, though, just sort of to, because I've been thinking of Oscara for a few moments here, the reason why I bring up Oscara is because the first Twi'lek that was released for Edge of the Empire, the first Twi'lek woman who is released for Edge of the Empire, which means for this particular system, is in laminate battle armor with a giant bloody gun.
Yes.
It was at that point that I just kind of was like, yeah, I'm totally here for this system.
Yeah, because they could have made her like a performer or something, and it's just like,
yep.
I would have just been like, nope. It's because, like, sure, there are definite reasons in universe for that to happen, and none of them are good. It is almost all, they got sold into slavery. It's like, not great. So if you're like, oh, there's an in-universe reason why she is a dancer at this bar and is wearing, like, no clothing, I maybe think about why you have to include that in your story and maybe subvert that trope.
Absolutely with it. That's kind of the other part, is that tropes at your table are tropes you are choosing to put there.
Yeah.
It may be conscious and maybe subconscious of why they're getting put there. You are choosing to put these tropes there. You are the ones who are putting this forward. If you're using characterization tropes, think about which ones they are. Like, Risa, one that you mentioned right at the beginning, which I'm now going to have to find the website for because I can't mention it and not put the website out. Fridging, all coming back to that bloody Green Lantern comic.
Yep.
Which wasn't all that good.
Nope.
Most tropes are still fair game, depending on what is acceptable at your table. The thing is if you want to do that for these more overdone and rather lazy tropes...
harmful sometimes. I would say fridging is a harmful trope.
You're absolutely right. It's at that point where the use of it needs to be examined. If this is being your shorthand for, oh, the bad guy is actually mentally deranged, well, there's like three or four different reasons why. Is this a good idea? Is this necessary at your table? And some of the stuff doesn't always have to be. Not every villain has to kick puppies.
And not every villain has to be horrifically scarred and using a cane.
Yeah, sometimes people aren't that scarred and still use canes.
Yeah, like me. But it's one of those things where you're having to look at yourself and ask, why am I using this trope? And is this trope harmful? Because a lot of tropes aren't harmful. They're completely fine and valid. But especially tropes surrounding villains, you might want to examine, why am I using this one? And is this trope harmful, especially to people at my table?
Yeah.
Because it's never fun to be like, ah, yes, and then the villain is doing this exact thing that someone at my table does. What are you trying to say?
Yeah, I'm kind of feeling like A, it's roughly that time, and B, I just kind of have final word on my head.
Let's do it.
All right. My final thought around using tropes is tropes can be great shorthand. If you're using them in regards to characterization, they can be amazing because they are shorthand. They can be shorthand for you and they can be shorthand for your players as well. You can have the amazingly trusting, inept spy who is a good pilot and trusting of his friends and will do anything for them. Or you can have the snarky mechanic who is amazing at her job and is resentful because she has lost her ship in races and now has to work as a mechanic to try and get the glory back. But she far outweighs her piloting skill with her mechanic's knowledge. You can get tropes for characterization that are succinct and allow you to grow the character. You can also find ones that narrow down things and narrow them down too much. Like, okay, I know in Wreck-It Ralph 2, they go through the entire Disney princess thing. But the one trope that just keeps on jumping out at me is the, oh, look, the parents are dead.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're Disney princesses.
Yeah. At least one parent has to die.
Yep. Player characters. Orphans. Could be. One parent dead. Sure. Just don't like their parents, also a fair thing. Or, hey, look, they could do the completely weird thing of having a good relationship with their parents.
It's true.
I haven't seen it yet, but I don't know. It could happen.
I did it once.
Oh, confused your GM.
Well, to be fair, she wasn't technically speaking to them at the time, but it's fine.
All right. So, Risa, do you have any final pieces of advice about using tropes in your games and plannings?
Use them. Use them lots. That's my advice. But when you're using them, examine them, especially when they're in regards to people. Examine them and ask yourself if it's a good idea sometimes. Like, environmental tropes, not as big of a thing. But if it's about people, and especially about NPCs, ask yourself, is this a harmful trope? And if it's not, then have a ball, you know? Do it, have a field day. But if the answer is yes, this is a harmful trope, then maybe put it back and grab another one. my back to the bar, sipping on my third drink. Ben, your pilot friend was supposed to show up 2 hours ago. I give up. If you need me, I'll be on the ship. I throw a hand up in a wave as I walk off in frustration.
Almost bumping into Risa, our prospective pilot finally arrives. The nebbish-looking Rodian looks on with a patch of a YT-2000 on their shoulder. Kicking out a chair, I shake my head. What took you so long? I made sure to send you hollows and directions and everything. Oh, I'm sorry. I had to get my Pantoran friend into a cool place before coming here. The heat and all. Join us next time on a star-hopping tale from the Hydean Way. You can find us on Twitter at The Hydean Way, and you can find me at Deuterium Ice.
You can find me at Cookie Kit. We're all at TheHydeanWay.com, where you can find previous episodes, links to things we talk about in the show, and our live play podcast, Heroes of the Hydean Way.
You can find more episodes on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Plus, you can help us out by rating and reviewing us.
Drop us a holocom at Tales@TheHydeanWay.com.
We're also on Facebook as Tales from the Hydean Way.
If you like what we do and want to support the show, you can find us at patreon.com/TheHydeanWay.
Or you can give us a coffee at ko-fi.com/TheHydeanWay.